to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth, as always, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is located at 3201 North Division Street, inside what we refer to as the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. Building's been here about a decade or so, one of the nicer facilities in the United States for this industry. Very nice. We offer one of the highest rated privately held depository services in the U.S. and for sure in the Western region. Very private, very secure, very anonymous, very reasonable. Although we are at a point now where we struggle now and then with certain box sizes being filled, not being available, and the smaller ones are the more popular, and everyone's small. I mean, they kind of come available now and then, but there's a lot of demand for that. I'm sure you can understand why. People buy compact wealth here, and then it's their goal to hide it and keep it private and keep it anonymous. So we provide that, our goal is to basically help people preserve their capital in a biblical, conservative, kind of a long-term financial technique. And I think, you know, folks, when you get into the real world of money, you get into reality, facts, truth, okay? So what's hot right now? Bitcoin, right? I mean, yesterday, if I'm reading this properly, yesterday, Bitcoin. Now, if you don't know what Bitcoin is, it's a cryptocurrency. What's a cryptocurrency? It is, I'll explain that in a minute, okay? Bitcoin yesterday supposedly went to 19.5 and today plummeted to $13,000 or per share. It's an absolute hype. I don't even know how to describe it. They're back in, Denmark or somewhere. In the 1700s, they had what was called the tulip bulb craze. And I knew where it was, and I don't have it right away. For a while, tulip bulbs became the hottest, wildest, tradable commodity imaginable. Tulips were a sign of wealth. They became something everybody was interested in, and they traded the bulbs. And, it went crazy. And then, of course, one day it all collapsed. And that reminds me very much of what's going on with cryptocurrency. So what I was saying a minute ago, people ask me all the time, what is Bitcoin? Okay. And I didn't intend to make the show about Bitcoin, but when you get into the tulip bulb mania situation, I've got a little information here. Now, it's been a few years. It was in the 1600s, so you might be like, well, how does that apply? It's called human nature. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, right? Everything repeats itself. We do it over and over and over again. That's just what we do, which if that's the case, there's a slim possibility we must not learn from history very well either, huh? I think that's probably the case, okay? So what happened back then, they had the 1630s, the tulip bulbs ran up. I'm going to try to see if I can get a little quicker thing. Not that it's probably the most interesting information you've ever received. They call it tulip bulb mania. I don't, let's see here. So it went from 1619 to 1622. They're mentioning they had a debasement of their currency. It says the contents of coins to fund warfare, they debased the currency. And then it said it created mania-like similarities to a bubble. So basically, that's interesting. Human nature, again, repeats itself. What happens? They're at war. They need money. Well, we have fiat currency. You can just print it, right? But they didn't. So what they would do is take people's, and this is in all of Europe. They said the Dutch Republic, and I'm do not consider this a history lesson, in fact, because I'm not very good at this. I don't have the information that well. But what they used to do, and this was very, very common among all empires throughout history. Rome did it. Greece did it. So what happens is when the government decides they want more money, there's only certain ways they can get it. Confiscation is when you have real physical true assets, it's just a it's a matter of which method of confiscation are you going to use to get that money to the government. And what, you know, one way is taxation, right? And people can only tolerate so much of that before they snap. One thing that's interesting is in a study a documentation of history, you could call it, they've seen that 47% tax rate is the threshold before rebellion. We are at 40 on the high bracket, and people are being taxed everywhere they turn. You would, everything you use, from your eyeliner, women, to your fingernail polish, to your belt, to your shoes, to your car, to the parts on your car, to your food, to your milk, everything has tax in it. Gasoline, everything is taxed to the hilt in this nation. They say that 75% of your money goes to taxes. So with a fiat currency system, we've broken the 47% rebellion trend by deception. So what they used to do in days of yore when the government needed money is they had to confiscate. They either taxed, the king went out, got brutal, kicked everybody's tail. We all know what Jesus referred to the tax collectors, not in what I would call a term of endearment, right? I mean, he literally referred to the tax collectors as the scum of the earth. And they were. They were on commission. They got a piece of the taxes, just like unscrupulous estate attorneys that literally charge a client based on how much is in the estate. To me, that's highly unscrupulous. I was mildly involved with a lady here recently that has a severely developmentally disabled daughter. She has a trust in California. She lives in Idaho. She has a trust in California. And the state of California is a bureaucratic nightmare. And every year or two, she's got to prove all of this performance stuff and what she's doing with the money. Literally, the state of California has taken on the responsibility of telling her whether or not they think her investments are suitable. They criticize where the money goes, etc. She wanted to move the money up here to our area to get out from under that brutal bureaucracy. Went and spoke with an attorney, one in particular. I think I tried to help her find a better one. But, she said, how much will it cost? And they said, well, how much is in there? And she told them how much was in there, and they proceeded to tell her how much it would cost, which was a lot, and it was a percent, about 10 or 11% of the amount in there. And she said, well, how can that be? And he said, it's based on the amount of money in there. Well, it doesn't take any more effort to transfer a $100,000 trust or a $10,000 trust or $1 million trust. It's the same amount of paperwork, energy, and effort. And especially when you're dealing with somebody who's developmentally disabled, I personally believe that there's a standard of ethics there that needs to be followed, etc. So I've run into that over the years. There was a, well, I've always got stories, but there was a an attorney I've known for decades who I respect greatly. He's not a believer, although he respects my faith very dearly, always was telling me stories of this one attorney that had done a couple of his clients wrong, very wrong, and the attorney was supposedly a Christian. And so because this attorney that I know knows I'm a Christian, he repeated this story to me numerous times. He was just disgusted, and he was helping this client trying to recuperate their estate, and this one attorney was really doing them wrong. Just kept absconding money, held on to it, you know, just made it last way too long and took way too much. So one time I was in a meeting or at a building where there was a meeting with the attorney that I know who's the non-believer, and then this other attorney that I'd never met, nor had he ever mentioned the name, came through. And I said hi to the other attorney because I know him through family connections, and he does estates. And after he left, the non-Christian attorney that I know said, "That's the guy." And I said, "What guy?" He goes, "That's the guy I've been telling you about, who just takes terrible advantage of people." And he proceeds again to tell me these horrible stories of how he freezes up their estates in probate, or I don't know if that's the proper term, but literally keeps them frozen up and just keeps taking fees upon fees upon fees, creating bureaucracy and really doing them wrong. And sadly, the Christian attorney who I'd known as a Christian and, you know, definitely had arrogant side to him, but it was just super disappointing to find out that this Christian attorney who purports himself to be a Christian and a leader in Christian circles is leaving a stench in his own industry for our faith. And it's when you're out there, no matter what you do as a believer, folks, you have to have integrity. You are, whether you want to or not, you are representing the name of Christ. You're his child. You are a member of his kingdom. People know it. And oddly, I always, you know, kind of ironically joke, non-Christians can tell you with some measure of accuracy exactly how you, as a Christian, should be living your life. They're usually off by about 10% because they don't have the truth and their perspective of what's right and wrong makes no sense. A lot of times non-Christians don't understand. They apparently feel guilty about money or making money, so sometimes they'll think that Christians shouldn't make money or whatever. But you do, but we all represent the name all the time, and we've got to remember that. Now, perfection has nothing to do with it. Judgmentalism has nothing to do with it. In fact, judgmentalism can be one of the stenchiest side effects of Christianity because we need to take extreme ownership of everything within our sphere of influence. We need to take everything personally and try to take responsibility for as much as we can. Whether it's at work, whether it's at home, whether it's at the grocery store and you see somebody hauling a bunch of groceries, a gal with a few kids and, you know, struggling, you just walk over and say, "Hey, can I get that for you?" Or the other day I was in a store and I saw a gal struggling with a large amount of stuff and I helped her out to the car and stuff. And, you know, no name, no nothing. You just do it for God. He says, you know, you get your rewards in heaven, and you shouldn't even have to do it for a reward. You just do it because it's right. But you represent Christ in all that you do. A good friend of mine who's a pastor was telling me one time he was in a situation in a parking lot, and it was very windy. He opened the door of his car, and all these papers. In fact, it was after church, and all these papers and flyers and stuff went blowing out of his car across the parking lot pretty bad. And he said, he looked, the parking lot's already filthy, there's stuff everywhere, and he's like, oh, man, you know, what do I do? He said, part of him just said, well, it doesn't matter, the parking lot's already messy. And he said, he finally decided, you know what, the right thing to do is pick it up. It's my mess, I'm going to pick it up. So he walks, chases his stuff down through the parking lot in the wind, spends all this time gathering up all these papers and a bunch of other garbage that had accumulated out there, and comes back to his car. When he's getting in his car, right next to him, all of a sudden now he notices in the car next to him is a couple that just started going to his church. It was their first Sunday, and he had just met them. And they saw what he did, and he said, hey, how are you guys doing? And they said, hey, we're doing great. They said, when we saw that stuff blow out of your car, they said, we looked at each other, and they said, we wanted to see what you were going to do. And they said, the way you handled it was amazing. And they said, we're very impressed. And we know that you live what you say you live. And it left a great impression on those people, for the pastor and for Christ. And you never know who's watching, right? You just don't. In this day and age with cameras, you might as well always assume you're being watched. If you don't, you'll just get yourself in a hogwash of trouble, because there's cameras every single place you go, and which is another conversation for another day, which is a great concern. So always make sure you're representing Christ well. And so how I got on that whole topic, don't know, but governments, you know, we were talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and then I went, I was reading about the tulip craze and reading how before that they had the debasement of currency for war, right? And so I was basically explaining that there has to be a form of confiscation of wealth in order to transfer wealth to a government entity. And even John Maynard Keynes, now that we have the Keynesian economics, he said that through a series, I'll try to look that quote up here in a minute, let's see here, I think we may have it right here. Come on, baby. See if you can do it. By this means, okay, again, when he created Keynesian economics, he said this is the necessary ingredient, or the means by which Marxism will prevail. It's the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. Then he says, by this means, the government may secretly and unobserved confiscate the wealth of the people, and not one man in a million will detect the theft. This is what the architect of our economic system said. Okay? So what I was getting at earlier, you go back, it's always hard to hide. The government wants to hide it, right? Because people, when the reason that we're on a fiat currency and that you have direct deduct of your payroll, of your taxes right out of your payroll, is because if we stayed on a gold standard, by the way, when we were on one, our taxes were far, far lower for a simple reason. You had that money in your hand. It was real. It was honest God-given wealth. So when it came time to pay taxes, like now, we've got tax brackets federally all the way to 40%. If you had 5 ounces of gold as your asset base and the government came and said, thank you, I will take 2 of your 5 ounces, you would be like, drop dead, you fool. You're not taking my gold. This is why God made gold and made us the way he did. We have an innate desire for gold built in. It's been proven through studies on young infants, okay? Pure gold. There's a built-in desire, a built-in knowledge, a built-in need, even a drive, just like food or reproduction. God gave us a driving desire for gold and silver. It's wild, but it's true. So in order to confiscate our wealth, it's necessary to transfer us away from our God-given system, God-created system, into something that is counterintuitive. Fiat currency, Keynesian economics, is counterintuitive. It's not consistent with anything we comprehend. On top of that, when you get into the system by which money is, quote, created, or I should say, quote, money is created, when you get into the system, it's so complicated and so convoluted that in order for the average individual to trace and track the processes by which a dollar comes into circulation, it blows beyond anything comprehensible or reasonable. They do that on purpose. There's literally an 18-step transaction through which a dollar goes before it goes out into the hands of its possessor. Okay, and that is so there's money spread. Little tiny micro fees are passed on from bank to bank to bank. That's a big component of it. But in other words, to spread the wealth around. And the second is just to maintain a level of non-intuitive confusion so people don't know. So in the old days, they would, in order to confiscate wealth, they didn't have a fiat currency per se, but they did have a habit of debasing currency. So what they would do is begin to remove the precious metals from the coins and replace coins with the same face value with new coins that had less and less of the intrinsic content of gold or silver in them. In some cases, Russia at one time in one location had so much platinum they thought it was garbage. And so they literally at one time made their pennies out of platinum, because platinum to them was a scrap metal that they had masses of. Very interesting. Just, you know, it's all geographical resource availability at that time, right? So what we've seen through history, I've watched it in, like I said, Rome, Greece, you know, all the way back to, we're talking about the Dutch Empire and, you know, various various locations in Europe. They've all done it. Italy, I could go on. They've all done currency debasement. It destroys the economy, okay? And this is why our founding fathers, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, gives Congress the express responsibility for the creation and valuation and preservation of money. They set a series of standards. What makes a $10 gold piece? It's called an eagle. The basis was all based on the $10 gold eagle, which is now we have a $50 gold eagle. That's why the $20 gold piece is called the old $20 gold piece from before 1933. Is referred to as a double eagle because it was $20 face value. The eagle was $10. The eagle was the basic central standard of money, and et cetera. So everything branches off of that. Well, in the Constitution, they gave the rights to Congress. In the Coinage Act of 1792, it says clearly that if anyone debases that currency, they shall be put to death. And it was that simple. Let me see this. And there was another. We had what are called colonial continental currency, colonial notes, notes from the colonies, banknotes from the actual colonies. We have them in stock. Really wonderful. A lot of times they're a little more odd in their denomination. Things like shillings, you know, they'll have like 6 shillings and a pound and whatever. because we were still intermingling, co-mingling our money with that of Great Britain and whatnot. But even on those colonial banknotes, it says clearly they would use actually back then a tree leaf stamp where like a tree leaf is like a fingerprint, right? Every tree leaf has a different, exactly a different print. So they would use a tree leaf block stamp to prevent counterfeiting, to say, look, this is the specific piece. Anything that isn't like this or deviates from it is not. So they would keep that stamp block preserved in, you know, secure storage or whatever under lock and key, as long as that banknote or colonial currency circulated, so that it could always verify if it was real or not. And if they did find out someone was debasing the currency, they would be put to death. So think of that. Think of how we started and think of how we did. Most people don't realize the strengthening growth of the dollar from the Coinage Act of 1792 until the Federal Reserve Act of 1933. Depending on how you slice it, the U.S. dollar increased in strength fivefold in that 100-year roughly period of time, meaning whatever cost you a dollar in 1792 would be 20 cents by the turn of the century of 1900. That is the power of a gold standard. That's also the power of a very strong currency, a non-negotiable, non-debatable, irrefutable currency. Now they have us set up on a fiat currency where they literally produce it out of thin air, just based on need, requirement, or demand, however you want to look at it. If they want it, they get it. Banks get it. Congress gets it. The people get it. And what's ironic about it now is we are running at such a rampant pace, okay? We currently carry almost $1.9 million in debt for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. The currency's empty and worthless. Hypothetically, it is nothing more than religion. Fiat currency is faith-based currency for the most part. Fiat currency is because I say it's good, right? A king decrees, in this case, the government, or the Fed decrees, this is a dollar, and everyone says, I'm on board, give me some of those, right? But as long as everyone agrees to play by that those rules, as long as everyone agrees to be bound by the faith of the Federal Reserve note, it'll work. But it's still never real money. You're constantly going to be facing exponential rates of inflation, okay? The higher and higher, the more they make, the more common it is, the more diluted it becomes. And then over time, your spending power outruns or becomes, it gets deducted or reduced till eventually you have a rapid unwinding. In time, and I can't tell you when, but I can guarantee you 100%, not 99.9, but 100%, there will be a full-blown meltdown of our currency and economic system. An absolute, irrefutable fact. There's absolutely no doubt it will happen. Everything about our currency system is broken, wrong, and bad. The only asset base, the only thing that backs it up as an asset is you and me as American citizens. We are the collateral. We are the reason that on a global scale that our debased Federal Reserve notes are worth something because people have faith in the American people. I mean, let's face it, they expect us to be able to go out and make a buck, to go out and produce and be creative and be reliable. All these things, they expect it. They know it. And it's really interesting in Revelation 18, where it talks about the destruction or collapse of Mystery Babylon, and it talks about all the things they traded on in, and I think it's the last one that says, and the bodies and souls of men, okay? Meaning that debt consumes your soul. If you are consumed by debt, somebody owns you as a slave, and that's ultimately what's wrong with debt. It says debt is unnerving. Debt makes you servant to the lender. Debt steals away your freedom. It's interesting that as we abolished slavery in this nation, we adopted a debt-based currency system, okay? Debt is bad. Debt is hard on you. It's very stressful. So we transitioned ourselves from one form of slavery to another, and that's actually the truth. Debt is a form of slavery, okay? We are literally enslaved, and you might be like, come on, Kevin, this is ridiculous, really? Well, folks, if you think you own anything, don't pay your tax on it and see how you do. The IRS is obviously a biblical form of tax collector. Because our system is a fiat currency debt-based system, the IRS is a debt collector. We owe debt, and it is very self-consuming. So with all that said, and still probably not even a fraction of comprehension of what I'm talking about, the synopsis of what I'm talking about is that there is a vehicle by which you can preserve and protect your money in a secure long-term fashion, and that is precious metals-based assets. It's simple. It just is what it is. You buy it, you preserve it, you put it away. I'll be honest with you, the market right now is a buyer's market. It's a great buyer's market. It's everybody is running and jumping into the stock market. Everyone's running and jumping into Bitcoin. So what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. What is a cryptocurrency? Okay, here we go. Money, by its very nature, is the embodiment of work energy. Money is supposed to be the result of hard work, energy, and effort. When we dig gold out of the ground, when we came out west in the 1800s and we had the Comstock lode near what became the Carson City Mint, a literal mountain of silver. Men go, men dig. Men accumulate, men refine. Men have silver or gold, the embodiment of their work. It's a real asset. It is work energy compact is what it is. So here's the logic. God created man to create wealth. God created man to create, period. Okay? So if we're created in God's image, and one of the unique attributes of us is the fact that we are created by God, and we can create, okay, when we dig up gold or diamonds or whatever, we are creating wealth, okay? So if we create a computer that mines something, is that also wealth? Okay, the first answer is yes, and here's why. If I have a computerized gold mining machine that does all the work to dig the gold out of the ground and process it and refine it and all that, but I built that machine and that machine is more efficient, yes, I am still creating wealth because I created that machine. But you're still gathering with that machine resources from the earth that God made. You're gathering God's resources. Now, with cryptocurrency, it goes a step further. The computer, this is nuts. See, this reminds me of fiat currency. This reminds me of the step-by-step process, okay, of how a Federal Reserve note is created. And what I mean by that, let's see if I can get some information on this. Let's see here. I'll get to that. So here's what I'm saying. The Federal Reserve system is, wow, I'll see if I can find something to try to break down this crazy process without driving you utterly mad, which I may or may not be able to do. Okay, but here's the deal. So when a Federal Reserve banknote is created, when $1 is created, trust me, there is a series of bonds and indexes and transfers and bills. And I mean, it goes on and on. Okay. They basically, the Federal Reserve, or the FOMC, I guess they call it, and I don't even remember what that means, approves the purchase of U.S. government bonds on the open market, okay? When the government's short of funds, the Treasury issues bonds and delivers them to independent bond dealers, which auction them off. So they go out to the open market and approve the purchase of U.S. bonds on the open market. And when they're short of funds, the Treasury issues bonds and delivers them to independent bond dealers. Okay. Then when the Fed wants to expand the money supply, which is to create money, the Federal Reserve Bank buys these government bonds from the independent securities dealers. And because financial markets always have an equal number of buyers and sellers, supposedly, because it's supply and demand. Then the Fed pays for its purchases with electronic credits. Now think, this is where it's getting weird. So they want to buy a bond. Okay. They approve the purchase of a bond. And how do they buy the bond? Right? They don't have money. Oh, they buy it with electronic credits to the seller's bank, which in turn credit the seller's bank accounts. These credits are literally created out of thin air. So that's what's stupid. They say, we want a bond. A bond is real money. A bond is debt. A bond is a guarantee of performance. It's a loan note. So they use electronic credits to buy these things. It's so much more in depth than this. I don't even want to go there. I just want you to understand how ridiculous this is. Then the banks receiving the credits, these electronic credits, use them as reserves. And then they use these electronic credits made out of thin air as reserves. Then they loan out several times the amount of these electronic credits that are being held in their reserve account due to the magic of what they call fractional reserve banking. If their reserve requirement is 10%, then they loan out 10 times the money that was put into the reserve. They get to put it back out in loans, okay? The banks can create new loans because of these increased reserves. As the money is loaned, the money supply in the United States increases massively. This is why when you go to usdebtclock.org, you see our deficit, $20 trillion, and then you add up all of the, quote, unfunded liabilities, money we owe, we're obligated to. You can't be obligated to pay off a debt you don't have the money to pay off. So they have basically a 10-to-1 fractional reserve system. So guess how much whatever. What our long-term obligations are, unfunded liabilities, guess how much they are? About 10 times the deficit, okay? It's actually 9 times because the first portion goes to the deficit. So if we have $20 trillion in deficit, we have $180 trillion in debt, unfunded liabilities. Over your head, good. That means your brain works just fine. Makes no sense. Completely counterintuitive. Absolutely against everything God made you to think. Our founding fathers would flip a cork, flip a lid, lose their cool, go into rebellion. We'd have a coup. We'd have a revolt. We've destroyed this country. We've adopted and infiltrated communism at every depth. Socialism, nuts, nuts, nuts. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm the guy that sounds crazy. I get it. I'll take it. It doesn't make sense. It's not reality. It's not real math. It doesn't work. Okay. Well, it works in the short haul. We think we're so intelligent because a system that has functioned properly for 4 or 5,000 years, the gold standard, is now being put on the shelf temporarily while we operate through this foolish system. And we say, look how great it is. Doesn't it work wonderfully? Because we've only been really practicing it in full. I mean, we've been practicing it about 40 years. Really, really practicing it post 9/11. That's when we went bonkers, bonkers. That's when we said, we got to have money. We got to put the debt on the back of the taxpayer. We got to do whatever it takes. Just like people that say, I don't care how bad they frisk me. I don't care how rough they treat me at the airport. I don't care as long as I feel safe. When it comes to fiat currency, I don't care how they make the money. I don't care. It's not my business. It's just money. Well, America was created as a country for who? Well, first of all, who created it? By the people. Who's it for? For the people, right? By the people, for the people. You heard that before? It's your country. It's my country. We need to care. Yes, for sure, we've had our politicians go rogue. They've become complacent. They've become deceptive. The system's become hyper bureaucratic, insurmountable, etc. Okay? So that system, just all you need to know, it really is as bad as I made it sound and worse. You get into, oh boy, I just really didn't intend to do this, but you get into the creation of the Fed in 1913. Prior to that, we had a gold and silver standard. So they actually allowed gold and silver backed notes to circulate alongside the new Federal Reserve banknotes, which, by the way, the Federal Reserve was created in an emergency meeting of 11 members of Congress on Christmas Eve, 1913, to ram it through. They deceived the public and some politicians into buying into it through persuading Williams Jennings Bryan, the great populist of the day. A populist is sort of a combination between socialist. Trump's very populist. It's what's popular, you know? What are the biggest masses of people? How do you make yourself popular with them? It's supposedly for the working man. So they convinced William Jennings Bryan that this was a great program. Apparently he didn't do his research, and he went ahead and agreed on the whole thing. And here we are today. So those notes ran alongside, the Federal Reserve notes ran alongside gold and silver notes from 13 forward. You know, then you get into they introduced the tax, the 16th Amendment. Our Constitution forbid any direct taxation on your ability to earn a buck. It called it slavery. Okay, back to that word slavery. Indentured servants paid taxes to their owners It's that's our founding fathers considered it taboo, voodoo, bad. They specifically stated in the Constitution, it's a no-no, never to be. So what do? We create a system that takes the responsibility away from Congress, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Congress must, it says, Congress shall, must, does control the money. And Congress did give that up. They should have been taken out by a lynch mob. Money runs the machine. Cars run on gas. Governments run on money. Okay? The people are controlled by the masses are controlled financially. Leaders will take away water and food and money, and believe it or not, they gain control. The more comfortable people become, the harder they are to control. So there's leaders that have that figured out. They don't have a heart, and they do terrible things. So basically, the two currencies ran side by side. We went into what's called the Roaring Twenties. We introduced a pretty aggressive graduated income tax, quote, temporarily for World War One. We ramped up the production of currency drastically, very drastically, to very, very high volumes in order to fund the war. Once the war was over, 1919, or whatever it was, I'm just throwing in my disclaimer there. We are still producing these incredible amounts of money. So now we need to keep that going to keep the hyperinflation going, because now you got the problem. Once a train gets running on these fiat currency systems, you can't pull them back. So then they transfer all this wealth to the businessman. They say, look, have whatever you want. We'll loan you money. Interest rates were really low. They'd sign everybody up. There was very little consumer protection from debt collection, too, at the time. So they begin to just infuse the world with capital. Businesses are flourishing. People are moving to big, beautiful homes. Life is apparently really good in America. People don't know why. They just know it is. Banks are making the money easy to get. Everybody assumes we're still on the gold and silver standard because they left the gold clause. The fact that it says it's redeemable in gold, they left that on Federal Reserve banknotes, believe it or not, through the war on Roaring Twenties. By the end of the 20s, the Federal Reserve tries its first experimental hyper-retraction of currency as a method to basically confiscate wealth, confiscate assets. They confiscate wealth by giving you money that depreciates or inflates, right? You get lower and lower spending power. They also confiscate wealth by seizing assets that are used to secure this debt. Okay, so now they're stealing farms. Well, basically, I'm jumping ahead of myself. You have the Roaring Twenties, probably one of the best times in this country. If you love architecture, there was some wild stuff. You like design, that's when women wore the most coolest looking dresses you've ever seen. It was chic to be wealthy. It was chic to look good, right? It's where blue sapphires and white platinum and beautiful embroidered silk clothing. And, you know, it really was. Some of the cars, if you're into antique cars, everyone knows what old Model A's and Model T's are. But they don't know about all the luxury lines of vehicles that were out there. There was dozens and dozens of amazing cars, Auburns and things that are beyond anything you can imagine. They're so classy and good. I like the one. There's an Auburn I saw at the Concours d'Elegance. In the passenger door, it has a big shelf that drops down. It's got a liquor decanter and liquor glasses. In the door, they have a bar. So when you're driving, you can mix yourself a drink and have a nice drink. I can't remember what was in the other door, but it was just about as interesting. So the Roaring Twenties, I'll keep it short and sweet. And they retract the currency. That's when you see people, the crash of 29, diving out of buildings. They've had it. They're done, right? It's over. Banks are confiscating everything like crazy. Okay, here's the deal. Bitcoin, same concept. It doesn't make sense. The only difference is, okay, fiat currency, Keynesian economics, is making money out of thin air. Right? It's not a God-given asset. I've said over and over, those things which are biblically attributed as true wealth, gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones, Those have lasted forever, beginning of time to the end. The Bible's clear. They go all the way. All these go right through the finish line, right? Do you think that all these fiat currency ideas are new? We think we're so smart. Now, I'll admit, the banks have learned, central banks have learned how to move the wealth around, transfer the wealth, do bailouts, include other countries, use other countries to overflow the excess to create a global environment, to absorb all this money, to continue the conspiracy longer. It's all there. It's all true. So it's making currency out of a non-biblical, non-God-ordained resource, right? Bitcoin, instead of man mining gold like I was talking about a bit ago, or making a computer to mine gold or create wealth, Bitcoin is a computer mining computers. In other words, they run this ridiculous algorithm that is mammothly massive, beyond anything you could ever comprehend, literally at the magnitude of the universe of stars, 6 trillion stars, and adding up the energy and distances and velocities or whatever. This algorithm that creates one Bitcoin is just as excessive as that. It's phony. It's one computer running itself so long that it finally completes this algorithm and makes a new Bitcoin. That's about all. I mean, that's what it is. It's a computer creating a computer currency. It is not made out of any real asset. It's just made out of computer energy. Then that algorithm becomes exponentially larger each and every single time. So each time it replicates, it becomes harder and harder and harder to do. It takes more energy. The argument is, hypothetically, when you hyperinflate a currency, it becomes more common because they're all equal. Technically, they're fungible. And so as more get out there, the value reduces. The argument with Bitcoin is that if each time it's harder to make, it makes them harder to get, it makes them more rare, and it increases the value rather than inflationarily decreases it. Bitcoin is emptiness. It's senseless emptiness. Everyone agrees, hey, it's money. People are now jumping in at paces and rates that make no sense to me. Unwed mothers of one putting their money in Bitcoin. Yesterday it was as high as over 19. Today it was as low as 13 and change. I mean, that's a pretty darn big swing. People ask me all the time about Bitcoin. Should I get it? Do I have it? No. I had some a long time ago, only for the purpose of online shopping. Now it's insurmountable. It's just too darn much. So avoid it like the plague, folks, is what I would say. It's going to blow. Today it goes all the way from 19 and change down to 13 and change. I personally don't know how much you can afford to lose, but I think Bitcoin would be a good place to test how much you can afford to lose. My belief is you stick with those things that are biblically attributed as true wealth. They may not be roaring up. They may even be down right now. They may go down. They may do whatever, but they're real. They're solid. They're the real deal. You buy it, you hold it, you put it away, you forget about it. You need some short-term money. You can buy certain kinds of bullion that are, real liquid. We can hold them, and, I mean, we can cut checks monthly. We can do whatever we need to get you, you know, what you need. But when you stick with what God says has worked forever, and you got to realize, like I said, folks, markets go up and markets go down. Now, coins are tremendous value. There's been big adjustments in the markets. There's a company that bought our dealer gray sheet, our wholesale sheet. They've adjusted pricing. It's very in-depth. It's all computerized. You can check everything online. That's one of multiple sources of information. But in general, the pricing's becoming streamlined and standardized even more so. It always has been, but now it's becoming readily accessible. It's becoming a great way to go. So balance yourself out. You've got to have a hedge, a balance. We build nice portfolios. Little, I don't care how big they are. Little, big, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, whatever works. We take care of you. It's important to us. We want to do you right. We are trying more and more and more to help you capitalize on the down market. Okay. We really want you to be able to get in at an all time low. It reminds me of the 1990s. Coins were soft. And then, of course, they took off in the 2000s, and then they went nuts in a while later. That feels a lot like now. So anyway, that is definitely the show for the day. I would highly recommend you take advantage of the time to just preserve and protect, okay? Do, you know, preserve and protect your wealth. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme at all. Anything that is bad. Bitcoin, why do you want Bitcoin? It could go up so much. Greed. Nope. Not why you invest. You preserve your wealth and capital. We've got runaway fiat currency right now, folks. Your spending power, your dollar, is literally collapsing each and every day. Now with Trump in office, they're talking about they'll be increasing rates over and over and over. Pretty soon, we're going to have higher interest rates, significantly higher interest rates. And we're going to have inflation. We're going to have extreme amounts of debt. The amount of student loan debt that people carry, folks, I mean, I could go through this with you. I will later. It's just absolutely insurmountable, unfathomable. What is accepted in our society is the most foolish financial behavior imaginable. And we set the pace for our future generation, the millennials. They don't care. They don't care about assets and growth and wealth building and wealth accumulation. They just want a payment, all right? So thanks for tuning in, folks. Take care. Give us a call. Let us take care of you. We got a big, a really cool hoard of dollars in. Great value. It's a great bulk silver price. They're very cheap relative to silver. Take care. God bless. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.